And welcome into the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. So pleased that you could be with us for the post-Thanksgiving edition. And we, on behalf of Pro Football Weekly, want to wish you a very happy, belated Thanksgiving. Hope that it was wonderful, a happy and healthy and safe day with your family and friends and some good football. And by now you are recovering from your tryptophan coma slash slumber. We're doing that slowly here. And what better way to do that than to talk a little bit of football? So today on the program, going to bring in Andrew Garda, one of our best Pro Football Weekly contributors. He does a weekly film review column that you can find every Monday, I believe it is, at ProFootballWeekly.com. So he'll be joining me, your host, Arthur Arkish, here momentarily to talk about the action-packed Thanksgiving Day slate. A lot of good football to discuss, and we'll talk briefly after that about a couple of the best games on tap for the Sunday schedule. And after we chat with Andrew, as we do every week, we will bring in Hub Arkish. He was actually on assignment at Ford Field yesterday working the sidelines for Westwood One. So just want to spend a few minutes getting his thoughts or getting his kind of perspective on a wild game in the Motor City that he was broadcasting, as I mentioned, from the sidelines. So we'll have Hub on later in the program. And once again, a reminder before we bring in Andrew that if you haven't done so already, please head over to iTunes and make sure you are subscribed to the Pro Football Weekly podcast. And while you're there, we would love it if you leave us a rating, comments and shares, any other forms of interaction, also very much appreciated. So we can't do this podcast without you, and we'd love it if you did subscribe. And before I launch in with Andrew Garda, I do want to just take one moment to familiarize you with our great sponsor, Loot Crate. On a quest for epic gear, housewares, and collectibles this holiday season, Loot Crate offers an epic range of pop culture items for less than $20 a month. Whether you're shopping for the geek in your life or you are that geek, Loot Crate is the best surprise you know is coming. Every month, there's a different theme and new exclusive items you can get, you can only get with Loot Crate. Treat yourself every month or give the gift of geeking out to a friend or loved one. They're always watching. They've designed a system to keep you down. They are meddlesome. Hello, friends. It's time for a revolution. Fight the power and pave the way for a brighter tomorrow with December's Rebellious Crate, featuring exclusive items from Assassin's Creed, Mr. Robot, Firefly, and more, including an exclusive Funko Pop figure, our monthly t-shirt, and pin. You have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive that month's crate, and when the cutoff happens, that's it, it's over. Make sure to head to lootcrate.com, www.lootcrate.com, /Shaw, S-H-A-W, and enter the code Shaw, S-H-A-W, to save $3 off any new subscription today. All right, thanks again to our friends at Loot Crate, and without further ado, let's bring on Andrew Garda of Pro Football Weekly and Sports on Earth.
Hello.
There's our guy, Andrew Garda, Pro Football Weekly contributor, Sports on Earth. You can find his work everywhere. Andrew, what's happening?
I'm just trying to see if I could actually move after eating yesterday. I'm thinking about getting myself a wheelbarrow.
That sounds like an effective method, actually. I could use a wheelbarrow over here, but I guess that means you had a kind of a fruitful, hearty day. Everything was enjoyable, I hope.
Yeah. You know, it was the first year that my eldest son was part of the varsity football team in the local high school, and they have a tradition where they'll have a turkey bowl. And when it's a home game, it's the Thanksgiving Day. So we got to start the day off with some football. They won. Unfortunately, my son wasn't playing because he broke his finger like 3 weeks ago. So he got to carry the water. But we had a good time with that, and then family came over, and then a lot of good football yesterday as well. So started with good high school football, ended with some pretty good NFL football.
All right, outstanding. Well, before we talk a little bit of NFL football, do you have a highlight? Do you have kind of a, this sounds like the beginning of a new Turkey Day tradition, but what about historically? Do you have a favorite activity throughout the day, a favorite meal perhaps? What's your favorite part of the day?
I'm a big mashed potatoes fan, so from a meal standpoint, that's probably, my wife makes homemade mashed potatoes. Yesterday, my sons helped, and homemade gravy, and I always really look forward to that. Used to, have our own little, flag football turkey bowl thing, but as everybody's kind of moved away and we've moved around, that hasn't happened. So now, having the high school football tradition, that's going to be kind of a new tradition that I think we really enjoy. Even though it was a little cold, yeah, it's good. And it's one of those times when you get to see other friends that normally you wouldn't see on Thanksgiving. So like a lot of other parents and a lot of people from the neighborhood that I wouldn't have seen yesterday, we got to hang out and chat, have some hot cocoa, and that was just kind of a nice added bonus. So that, I think, is our new tradition that I really enjoy.
Oh, very good. Well, I'm glad to hear it. Once again, we are chatting with Andrew Garda, a Pro Football Weekly contributor. You can find his work, his weekly film review, always a must read. And as I said, he's all over the place at Sports on Earth, Football Insiders. You have a long Twitter bio, Andrew. That's pretty impressive stuff of places you can be found. but let's launch right in.
Yeah, when I'm not at the table.
let's start with the morning game, or late morning game, I should call it, at Ford Field. Another insane one. Clearly, Detroit is going to kind of be playing with fire all season, but it's worked out with them to date. I guess just your thoughts on the way that they are surviving on a weekly basis with all these incredible fourth quarter comebacks by Matthew Stafford and the rest of that team.
Yeah, and it coupled really nicely this week with what has happened to Sam Bradford the last 3 weeks, which is a meltdown of some sort. The last couple weeks it's been sacks that have killed drives, but nothing really killed the Vikings the way that interception did on that pass. He's trying to get to Adam Thielen, and Darius Slay stepped underneath. And it's interesting because in some respects you look at these two teams, and offensively, they're issues. And with the Lions, they really shouldn't. I understand that the Vikings defense is a very good defense, so perhaps it's not that shocking that Stafford only threw for 232 yards and a touchdown. Had to lean on the run game a little bit. They had a lot of different runners, a lot of different guys out of the backfield. Zenner was in there, Dwayne Washington, mm-hmm. and Theo Riddick all got a couple of carries. But you expect that at some point that they're going to start trying to bomb deep, and it didn't happen as consistently as I expected it to. And I guess we're seeing the sort of the morphing of this offense away from a Calvin Johnson deep threat, just throw it no matter how many people are draped onto his shoulders offense, into that maybe not a more balanced offense, because certainly running the ball 19 times, that's including four Matt Stafford scrambles, mm-hmm. compared to throwing the ball 40 times, that's not balance. I mean, that's not close to balance. But you're seeing more distribution of the passes, more guys involved. Anquan Boldin with 9 targets yesterday, on top of guys like Marvin Jones with 11 targets and Tate with 7 targets. So I feel like you're seeing more balance in terms of the passing. I'd like to see a little more balance in terms of actually running the ball a little more. But, the Vikings defense has been playing well the last couple of weeks, and it's their offense that's been sort of letting them down. So, you look at the Vikings and there's no balance there at all, really. And it's just they're trying to win by death by 1,000 cuts. And, you leave yourself very little margin for error. And then you have what happened yesterday, which is that late interception, and, that's ball game.
Right, yeah. I mean, I guess they're both playing with fire. Obviously, the Lions waiting till so late to turn it on, and like you said, the Sam Bradford and the Vikings with this horizontal passing game and giving Darius Slay a chance to just sit and kind of know that that's exactly where that pass was going. But let's stick with the Lions for 1 minute. Do you think that their inability to run the football, and I think it's in part missing Amir Abdullah, and it's in part because the offensive line hasn't come as far as they had envisioned? But how does that play into if they're able to hold on to this lead? And we'll get your thoughts on a minute if you think they are. They do have 3 of their final 5 on the road, some tough road games ahead in the NFC East. But if they are able to clinch their first NFC North title, does their lack of a run game concern you that they'd be a one-and-done candidate or someone that's not going to be viable in the playoffs?
Yeah, it does, because you look at some of the teams that they really have to be concerned about, like the Cowboys, right, to an extent the Seahawks. And if you go one-dimensional against those guys, that's it. I mean, you're not going to be able to you know, just let them sit back and kind of just defend the pass, you know, and go after Matt Stafford, pin your ears back and just kind of go. You know, even a team like Dallas, which has some questionable secondary talent at times and has some injuries to deal with, I think that at some point they've got to do more to try and establish more of a run game. And, you know, it seems like they're not terribly happy with Washington. They're not giving him, you know, a significant amount of runs. And then, you know, they don't want to give Riddick the whole load. And you might be right. Maybe missing Amir Abdullah, like, is really what's hurting them. But they've got to do something. And I think, you know, you're going to, especially, you know, the two teams specifically that I just mentioned in terms of Seattle and Dallas. But even if you look at, you know, Atlanta, which, you know, maybe they hold on to the South, maybe they don't. But if they come in, they've got a pretty dynamic offense as well. So not only do you want to have different ways to attack the defense, but the Cowboys, the Falcons, and the Seahawks can all put points on the board.
Yep.
And so if you, you know, if you're not trying to grind some of the clock, if you're not giving your defense a break physically, you know, if they're on the field a lot because you can't run the ball and you're going three and out, and, you know, you're going to end up with a gassed defense. And in the playoffs in the third and fourth quarter, that's just no good. So, yeah, I think it's going to be an Achilles heel for them if they make the playoffs. And, I mean, it does look like they could hang on to this division, but, you know, they could be one and done pretty easily.
It's pretty amazing that the state of the Lions currently is that we're talking more. Well, obviously, the story is what they've done in crunch time, and that's obviously the story of the Lions this year. But when we talk about them in terms of the concerns, it's not so much Matt Stafford anymore. Man, has he been? He's been pretty productive and has largely avoided mistakes. And aside from that run game, it had been the defense that you know, had been an issue. Has been dealing with injuries all year. Do you think the defense is trending upward at the right time, though? I mean, it certainly feels like it, not only from a health standpoint, but just performance-based. And how do you feel about that unit, you know, if maybe they're able to get a little bit more from the run game, or even if they're not? I mean, are they heading in the right direction where you think they could stand a toe-to-toe with some of these heavyweights on offense?
Yeah, it's really hard to get a read based on what we saw Thanksgiving. Yeah. I was reading something on Pro Football Focus recently. They were saying before Thanksgiving, they'd missed 66 tackles this season. That's bad. I mean, and that's a technical standpoint. I am heartened, you know, I'm heartened by the fact that Darius Slay was talking about how much they had planned to, you know, practice the trap and all of the different things they did to scheme for this Vikings offense. But the Vikings offense is so limited, like so absolutely limited, that it's really hard to get too much of a read on whether, you know, we're seeing a turnaround right now. And, right, you know, to me, one of the biggest problems has been the technical standpoints of the Lions defense, missed tackles, missed reads from the secondary. And so I'm still a little bit concerned. And I don't want to read too much into a game against a pretty limited Vikings offense, but sure. They've got the talent there, and I felt like, especially up front, they have the talent. You know, guys like, I like Tahir Whitehead. I've liked him for a long time, and I feel like he's starting to kind of come along. So, you know, guys like that continue to step up, then, yeah, then if this team gets hot defensively, then it kind of changes the game a little bit, and I might save them a little bit of trouble if they can't get the run game going.
Sure. It does seem, again, like they have kind of gotten hot, but then we have to consider that they did play the Vikings twice in an 18-game span. They have played the Jaguars recently. They lost in Houston to Brock Osweiler and the Texans, Case Keenum and the Rams. So there haven't been a ton of big-time challenges of late, but as we mentioned, that should change. They go to New Orleans in Week 13. The Giants and the Cowboys also on the near horizon after a home game against the Bears. So the Lions have certainly kept it interesting, and it'll be fun to watch them as things progress. Andrew, let's talk about the middle game a little bit, the NFC East. And I thought a pretty entertaining game. The Cowboys, you know, it's funny. I think the last time I had you on this podcast, we were both at that point, maybe, I don't want to say we were discounting the Cowboys defense, but we had a hard time envisioning how things were going to hold up as they have. And again, it's been about a month, 6 weeks since we've talked. Just your very general thoughts on the Cowboys, winners of 10 straight, and they can do very little wrong right now, it feels like.
Yeah, and what's amazing is that, you know, I mentioned it before, but, you know, they had, like, an injury to Morris Claiborne. Like,
Yeah.
they've got other issues that you would think could kind of trip them up. And yet, they're playing really good football on both sides of the ball. And I think you're seeing a defense that maybe was a little better than we thought it was to begin with. And, you know, with our hindsight 2020 glasses, we look at last season and we're like, well, they were awful last season. Maybe part of the reason they were awful last season is because the offense couldn't stay on the field.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're constantly behind the eight ball. You're constantly trying to play catch up, and you're constantly on the field. And, you know, they had injury issues. They had other issues last year. And those things all sort of compound when you have an offense that's not playing well. And now you have an offense that has one of the best young running backs in the league, has a quarterback who's playing far above what we expected him to. And as we always say, I think I don't even know that we need to say it. We should just open shows saying it. One of the best offensive lines in the NFL. You know, and then Dez Bryant's healthy. You've got Cole Beasley have a career season. I mean, I think on the one hand, yeah, we underestimated what this defense was capable of. But on the other hand, you've got an offense that's giving them some breathing room. And I think, you know, not only you're not exhausted because you're not on the field all the time, and not only are you not frustrated because you're down 14 points every game,
right?
But you know you're playing loose because you're ahead. You know, you know that your team, I mean, this is a team, that an offense that has put 316 points on the board. Like, that gives your defense, like, a lot of confidence. Like, they can take chances, they can play loose, and I think that makes a huge difference for a lot of defenses, especially for a defense like Dallas that, you know, is dealing with some injuries and, you know, I think still has a bit of a talent deficit.
Yeah, I think so too. But again, it hasn't really been exposed too much because they're playing such tremendous complementary football, and that's been fun to watch for sure. Andrew, what do you think about kind of the whole Dak and Zeke dynamic, and everyone's talking about this, you know, just what a rookie revelation this backfield has been. Are they MVP candidates? We know they're offensive rookie of the year candidates, but it's hard for me to think that they're not also in the MVP conversation. And if you sided with one, who would it be at this point? Is it the quarterback because he's the quarterback?
You know, and it's tough because also, you know, my natural tendency, because I'll vote on the PFWA, you know, Pro Football Writers versions of these, yep, you know, I guess in just a month. And I'm going to sit there and I'm going to go through the same thing that you always go through as a voter, which is like, yeah, but he's a rookie. You know, it's hard not to be tremendously overimpressed with Prescott at this point. You know, you yesterday was a great example. You know, he's a guy who, even when they pressure him, he seems to just be calm, make the right decisions. You know, he keeps improving each and every week. So it's hard not to kind of fall in the Prescott camp, especially considering our expectations were exceedingly low for him. Elliott, we had high expectations.
Right.
I lean kind of towards the running back. All that said, I kind of lean towards the running back because it's such a, the MVP is such a quarterback award that I like to be a bit of an anarchist. And, mm-hmm, you know, I was hard on Adrian Peterson when, you know, I was really, you know, beating my chest in on the table for him when he won the MVP. And I'm kind of feeling the same way for Elliott, because even though he's got a tremendous offensive line in front of him, and even though he was a guy coming in that we expected a lot of, I feel like he's kind of blown past a lot of those expectations. And I think you could make a really strong argument that part of the reason Prescott is playing as well as he has, especially early in the season, is because he's got Ezekiel Elliott running the ball, and defenses can't just go after Prescott because Elliott will kill them. So I kind of lean towards Elliott, but I think it's an interesting year when you have not only just two rookies, but two rookies on the exact same team in the same offense, you know, who could have a strong argument for MVP. And I think both of them do have a pretty strong argument at this point.
Yeah, it's pretty wild, and, you know, fortunately for the Cowboys' sake, and frankly, fortunately for all of our sakes, because it's been so fun to watch, we haven't had to really find out yet what it would look like if one of those guys lost the other one, obviously. It's been kind of everything heading in the right direction thus far for the Cowboys, and pretty wild to watch. I do want to get your Washington take quickly, but before I do, Andrew, just, your thoughts on the Dez Bryant, Josh Norman thing that spilled over into the post game, and obviously two of kind of the peskier, more antagonizing type players in the league. But what'd you see in that battle, you know, in between the white lines? And then do you have any thoughts on that kind of boiling over? I guess it's probably on the list of surprises, probably not near the top.
Yeah, not really near the top. This is what Josh Norman does, man. He's a he's a needler, you know. And you know, I think we forget sometimes. Well, because we're so focused on the Giants, you know, and Odell Beckham Jr. and his hothead. Right. You know, Dez Bryant has a bit of a hothead himself. So, you know, that's how you try and get him off of his game. Is you get in his head, you try to get him off his game, and that's what Norman does. So, you know, you saw some of that, and I'm sure. When the coach's film comes out, you know, this weekend, I'll take a look at it and I'll be like, "Wow, he's really poking and prodding Brian on every single play." You know, mm-hmm. and it, to an extent, it worked. You know, Brian had 5 catches, just 72 yards, kept him out of the end zone. But you know, you get back to our just earlier conversation. You can't just stop the passing offense because you're going to get killed, you know, on the ground with Ezekiel Elliott with his 2 touchdowns. So, I mean. You got to build a whole complete defense. You know, it can't just be Josh Norman. You can't just try and shut down Dez Bryant. And that's what makes this Dallas Cowboys offense so dangerous. You know, post game, on the one hand, it's entertaining. You know, I can't hate on it because it's always sort of fun to kind of watch. Sure. And having been in locker rooms, you know, everybody's hot after it. You know, we've had a really intense battle. All it takes is 1 or 2 words back and forth. And, you know, like I said, Norman's entire job is to antagonize. And on top of it, you've got, you know, the Washington-Dallas rivalry that dates back, you know, and, you know, when dinosaurs rocked the earth, I guess. you know, so that's going to heighten it a little bit. You know, to some extent, you'd like to see these guys sort of throttle it back a little. And just kind of be like, all right, well, that was between the lines. We're going to leave it there. But, you know, they can't. Now, the question is like, next time they see each other, you know, does this factor in? Does Norman already have a leg up on Bryant because he's already in his head? You know, I know he rents some pretty spacious space in Odell Beckham's head. You know, is he going to rent, you know, a smaller apartment somewhere in Bryant's head? Then because that's what Norman does. And I think that for Norman, it's a plus positive. You know, he's like, I'm going to continue messing with Bryant. So the next time I see him, you know, he's already going to be amped up and maybe he's going to make mistakes. It's going to be easier for me to kind of get under his skin. Mm-hmm. You know, for Bryant, Bryant's got to move on. You know, he's got bigger fish to fry right now. And I think he just sort of needs to let it go. So the next time they see each other, Norman doesn't already have that leg up. But, you know, it's at least entertaining for those of us. It was something to watch over turkey, that's for sure.
Yeah, no doubt, and obviously with Norman in the NFC East now, we have more of those matchups to look forward to, at least more often than we would have in the past. Andrew, just on Washington's side of things, how are they able or not able to bounce back from this? I mean, obviously they played the Cowboys tough. What'd you think of Jay Gruden's coaching decisions there in the fourth quarter, going for the onside kick with nearly 10 minutes left? I don't know if you thought that was the right call or not, and then just overall, Washington defensively obviously couldn't get the job done, but they couldn't really get their run game going either. It wouldn't seem, just 2.9 yards per carry, not exactly the best method for trying to keep that high-powered Cowboys offense off the field.
Yeah, and you know, and I've kind of railed at Jay Gruden about his lack of commitment to running the ball, and now, you know, he 14 carries for Kelly. I think that's pretty serviceable. When you just get 37 yards out of it, at some point you kind of have to go, yeah, this isn't working. You know,
right.
Chris Thompson had a little more pop, so I felt like that works. Maybe trying to figure a way where you can alternate them a little bit more might be to Washington's benefit. Mm-hmm. But you know, Dallas was just really good at, for the most part, stopping that run. I felt like, you know, the onside kick call, it's hard to really want to murder someone for that because we've seen that sort of surprise work before. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and this is at any level of football, you run the risk of giving the other team half the field. And with 10 minutes left, that's kind of a difficult position to put your defense in. And, you know, and especially given that even though you can't say that the defense was awful, I mean, they gave up a lot of points, but if you look at, you know, aside from the run game, you know, Dak Prescott only had 195 yards passing through the air. So, you know, if you feel like this is the time you're going to be able to maybe contain Elliott and stand up, if you could just get that one three downs and out, then you're good. It's just, I don't know that I was feeling watching that game like I was exactly, I don't know that I would have leaned on that. I don't know that I would have bought that from Gruden had he come to me on the sideline and said, this is what I'm thinking. We're going to be able to stop him this time. That's a gamble. And I don't know that I would have done it. But I'm also not a high-priced coach, so that may be the reason. I don't take enough chances, but it's funny because most of the time, you know, the coaches are the most conservative guys out there. So, you know, I give them credit for giving it a shot. It just, you got to have your defense be able to perform afterwards. And, I think they didn't quite pull it off. And the fourth quarter was probably one of the more exciting quarters of football we saw yesterday. There was, what, 5 touchdowns in the space of less than 10 minutes, so certainly not boring, that's for sure. So if that added to it, great.
Yeah, and I don't think, just in general, Washington is just an exciting team. I mean, Kirk Cousins has certainly exceeded my expectations, and at least with Gruden and the onside kick, just kind of closing that conversation, it was in line with the way he has coached this year. Just last week, he's so aggressive with Cousins, you know, firing downfield through the wind and everything, so at least he's kind of been that guy throughout. But, Andrew, before we take a quick look at the nightcap, and I'll get your thoughts quickly on one of the two, one or two Sunday games, just your thoughts on Kirk Cousins and what he has accomplished. I would have to think that there's no way that Washington's letting him get away now, but has he performed better than you thought, and maybe even particularly after what appeared to be a rough first couple weeks where it seemed like maybe the pressure of that franchise tag was kind of weighing on his shoulders a little bit? He's been great since.
Yeah, I've really been impressed with him. I don't know that, you know, I put him as one of the best quarterbacks in the league, but I feel like he's really performed. He's had some bad games. You mentioned the first couple of games of his season. And I would even say that, even more recently, he's had a couple of games where you looked at him and were sort of like, I don't know. But you see these games like he had yesterday, or the 3 touchdown, 375 yards he threw against the Packers, or, you know, the 458 yards that he threw against Cincinnati. And I'm impressed with what he does, and he certainly is, I think, worth a nice contract, and is the answer for Washington at their quarterback position. You know, there's some talk, and I've read it, and then I've also heard it offline, that they may try and franchise tag him again. And if you're a Washington fan, and that kind of freaks you out because you don't want him to be ticked off, figure that what they're looking at right now, based on what he's done this year, is a pretty difficult contract negotiation right now. So if they tag him again, they're just buying themselves time and keeping him off the free market, because if he goes off on the market, he's going to get snapped up in about a half a minute. And someone will back a Brinks truck up to his house and dump the money on his front lawn, you know, the moment that he's a free agent. So if you're a Washington fan and you're like, oh, no, don't tag him again, my read on that is, and from what little I've talked to people who've covered the team and whatnot, is that, you know, if they do that, that's to buy themselves some time. And I think they might need to, because, you know, they gambled. They gambled that maybe, you know, they'd be able to get him cheaper than he, you know, is going to be worth. And now, you know, after, you know, week 11, week 12, you're looking at having to lay out an awful lot of money for the guy. And it seems to me like he's worth it.
Yeah, that makes sense, though, about the prospect of potentially tagging him twice. I mean, the real panic, obviously, for Washington fans is if they do let him hit the market, as you alluded to. So, look, it's a tool to teams for that reason, and while it would still probably be surprising, I don't think it would be the wrong decision either. So that's going to be interesting, and some of the reports have indicated that, you know, negotiations kind of have remained a bit contentious or are far apart. So we'll see what happens with that. Andrew, just hitting on the nightcap quickly, any team that doesn't want to double cover Antonio Brown at this point, I think I'm out of, you know, I have no sympathy for them at this point. But your thoughts on Brown kind of ripping up Vontae Davis and the Colts, and are the Steelers back? I don't know. It was an impressive offensive performance, but what kind of concerns do you have with that defense having some issues with Scott Tolzien, and at least between the 20s?
Yeah, I mean, and you know, much like beating up on the Vikings on offense, you know, it's really hard to get a read on exactly what to think.
Right, right.
Yeah, I mean, this is the problem with the Colts. They don't have a good defense, and the offensive line is kind of a mess, and basically it's built on the premise that Andrew Luck will save us, you know, and you don't have Luck, so, and I like Scott Tolzien. I liked him when he was with Green Bay. I think, yeah, I mean, I didn't feel like he, you know, embarrassed himself or anyone else out there. So, you know, I think he did all right. And, you know, whether that highlights a real problem with the Steelers defense or not, is kind of hard to say, only because, you know, I'm not a huge fan of bend but don't break, but it works. And, you know, that's essentially what the Steelers did. They, you know, you can run up and down the field as much as you want between the 20s, but you're not going anywhere in the red zone. And that's essentially what they were able to pull off. And the Steelers did a good job shutting down Frank Gore. And when they, you know, even though Todman had a couple of nice runs, for the most part, you know, there was nothing you could do on the ground. And, you know, you spread out the receptions among Hilton and Allen and Moncrief. And, you know, it just, there is no rhythm to the Colts offense to a great extent, because I felt like the Steelers did a good job of disrupting that ground game, and also, you know, staying on the receivers and keeping Tolzien hopping too, you know, creating some bad decisions on his part. You know, the two picks, you know, are, I think were in part because he didn't really have much room to work with. So, yeah, I think defensively, I still have some questions about the Steelers, but offensively, they're back. I mean, this is an incredibly dangerous offense. I mean, here's what's amazing. I was looking at the stat sheet for it, because I'd watched the game, and I'm like, it does feel like Ben Roethlisberger only has one receiver out there. Like, he's only got Antonio Brown. And as you said, if you're not going to triple cover this dude, then I have no sympathy for you. He only threw the ball to five receivers, and that includes, you know, Brown, Ladarius Green, Eli Rogers, Le'Veon Bell, and the Hamilton, Colby Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at that point, if you're the Colts, like, he's not spreading the ball out so much that you're like, oh my Lord, who's he going to throw it to next? I mean, you look at what the Steelers did with, I think it was eight different receivers who caught the ball for the Colts, and the Steelers were able to kind of tamp them all down and keep them controlled, with the exception of Moncrief's one touchdown, keep him out of the end zone.
Right.
And then the Colts can't handle five receivers. You know, it's not good. It's not good. But, you know, Roethlisberger looks like he's feeling confident. He's pushing off his leg. He's planting. His mechanics seem to be back, which was a concern I had when he first came back. It didn't look like he was throwing the ball well. Bell is Bell. You know, Le'Veon Bell looks as dominating as we expected him to. You know, I don't know if he is a superstitious man, you know, and wants to try and get suspended at the beginning of every season, because he seems to have a tremendous remaining games of the season. You know, and then, you know, what the one thing is, from a receiver standpoint, is Antonio Brown. If someone can figure a way to slow Brown down, you know, Wheaton's banged up. There's a lot of question marks beyond Brown right now. So, you know, does Ladarius Green become that alternative receiver for Roethlisberger? Can Eli Rogers, you know, continue to play better? But there's a lot of question marks. So if you can figure a way to shut Brown down, and so far nobody's really been able to do it very, you know, consistently, you know, what happens with this offense? You know, luckily they have Bell, so they can just run the ball. But in terms of receivers, you know, that's my one question on the offense here.
We'll see if it's Janoris Jenkins. The Steelers will welcome the Giants into town next week. Jenkins has been playing about as well as any corner in the league, so that should be a fun matchup. Andrew, I took too much of your time already. I do just want to spend another minute or two looking at a top game or two for the Sunday slate. I guess we have to start in the AFC West, and just your thoughts on Kansas City headed to Denver. Kansas City's offense a bit broken right now. Marcus Peters is banged up. Broncos coming off the bye and should be healthier defensively, but still not running the football well. And Trevor Siemian seems to have been put on notice a little bit by Gary Kubiak, who said, I don't want him to be okay. I don't want him to be good. I want him to play big and be very good. I know there's a lot to unpack there, but kind of what do you look at in that AFC West battle and where these teams are at?
Yeah, it's okay because, like I said, I need a wheelbarrow to move, so I'm stuck here anyway. You got me. But
all right.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's funny. If this was a more potent offense on Denver's side, then I'd be really concerned as a Chiefs fan, you know, with Marcus Peters being banged up and with their offense having issues, and, you know, then Denver can take advantage of this. But Siemian hasn't really played exceptionally well, and
that's
despite having Emmanuel Sanders and Demaryius Thomas there. You know, he's got two really good wide receivers.
Right.
I think he is hampered by the fact that Devontae Booker's not playing the way that they hoped he would. And as much as people sometimes are frustrated with C.J. Anderson, who didn't exactly have a phenomenal season before he got hurt, I felt like he was more effective, and Booker hasn't taken that over. Biggs and Bibbs. I'm thinking I'm still eating. But I would say that you know, he hasn't really stepped up either. So you've got a backfield issue. You've got an offensive line that, you know, has problems itself, and you've got an entire offense then that's a little dysfunctional. So even though the Chiefs have a dysfunctional offense, so do the Broncos. So it kind of comes down to which defense makes the mistake. And both of them have played such a high level for so long, this almost feels like a home team's going to have the advantage sort of game to me. Like Denver and Mile High, you know, with their crowd, with everything going on, they get a keep to lead back, it seems like. They should be a little healthier. I'm leaning towards Denver, but this is a huge game, and this is really important too, because you've got Oakland with a what could be a tough game against Carolina. Mm-hmm. Those three teams are so tight right now, and although all three of them have a good shot at making the playoffs, these divisional games, like between KC and Denver, I think could make the difference between winning the division and maybe not even making the playoffs. So, I mean, this is going to be a really hard-fought game and probably one of the better games we'll see this entire season, I think.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. We're all treated because it was, of course, flexed into primetime. I know that came at the expense, I believe, can I say, of your Jets? Is that accurate? Andrew, when I follow you on Twitter, you're watching the Jets often. Is that a hometown team or no? Is that just you love watching the train wreck?
No, I grew up a Jets fan, so I will occasionally watch that train wreck, but I'm totally fine with flexing that out. So
yeah.
You have no complaint from me.
Well, we're not going to talk about that game, but I do just on the way out, just to get one more heavyweight in here into the conversation. The Seattle Seahawks go to Tampa Bay. The Buccaneers suddenly hot in their best two-game stretch of the season. Andrew, does this feel like a potential trap game to you, or do you just think Seattle kind of has too much for Tampa Bay? Seattle a little banged up now, too. We'll be without Earl Thomas and Deshaun Snead and, of course, C.J. Procise. So is this potentially a timing thing where Tampa can maybe stay hot at home, or what do you think with this one?
Well, not only is it a timing thing, but Seattle's not very good on the road. You know, 2-2-1, and
right.
They show up big at home, and they show up small on the road. The counterpoint to that is that the Buccaneers only have one win at home. So the home environments of the pirate ship are not quite as menacing as you would hope it would be.
And that was Jay Cutler's giving Bears, so maybe that should just be a half win. I know they don't count them that way, but anyway.
The only team that I think a win counts less for is than the Bears right now might be the Jets. So
yeah.
But the thing is that the Bucs defense feels like it's starting to find its groove, and I am forever confused and frustrated by this Bucs defense because they have far too much talent to have the struggles that they've had over the last couple of years, and they feel like they're starting to get a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And offensively, you know, Mike Evans is playing at a high level. I like what I see from Jameis Winston on most weeks and most plays. The offensive line has been performing a little better, and Doug Martin coming back is a big deal for them. So, yeah, I mean, the Seahawks' road struggles and some of their injuries, coupled with the fact that the Buccaneers feel like a team that has improved and has their offense kind of at least, you know, back together, has the band back together, feels like it could very well be a game that the Seahawks lose. You know, would it shock me if the Seahawks rolled in and just absolutely blew out the Buccaneers? No, because the Buccaneers have underperformed, especially defensively, for a lot of the year. And the Seahawks, you know, while they have some injury issues, Russell Wilson's healthy, Doug Baldwin's healthy, Jimmy Graham's playing well, so you still have a lot of talent on that offense. But it does feel, you know, you look at what Seattle's done on the road and you look at how Tampa Bay's playing right now, and I do feel like this is a game that could very well be an upset by the end of the day.
And then my last one for you, just to follow up to that, has Seattle's offensive line improved, or has Russell Wilson's health maybe minimized the O-line issues? Because I remember last year when the offense got hot, it seemed like his protection made just enough strides to kind of supplement that. Is that what we're seeing again, or is this more Wilson's greatness now teaming up with Jimmy Graham, and we saw Procise and now Rawls last week?
Yeah, I think it's more about the other pieces on the offense than the offensive line. Yeah. Although, you know, credit to Tom Cable, because he does find ways to get this patchwork offensive line to play just well enough to give Russell Wilson just that extra second or two for him to make a pass.
Right.
But I think that, you know, if you had a different quarterback back there, you know, and it could be one of the better quarterbacks in the league, could be Tom Brady, behind that offensive line, I think this is not going to be, this would not be pretty. So the fact that Wilson's healthy and mobile again, mm-hmm. and that, you know, that makes the whole offense work better. So I think it's more Wilson and Rawls in that group than it is the offensive line. But I do feel like the offensive line has done better of late. But I just also think that that's in part because Wilson is able to move and he kind of covers a lot of problems there.
Sure, sure. Yeah, they'll be tested this week with Gerald McCoy and Robert Ayers, and those guys getting a little healthier too. So, Andrew, I will let you go for real. This was a lot of fun. I will let you kind of get back to the wheelbarrow or the Black Friday plans or whatever you got going at this point. But I hope you have a wonderful weekend, and we really appreciate having you on. This was a lot of fun, this discussion.
Yeah, anytime, man. I am not going anywhere. The next Black Friday I attend will be the last Black Friday I attend. It's never going to happen. But yeah, great time, and always happy to talk to you, man.
And one more time, that's Andrew Garda at Pro Football Weekly and Sports on Earth. Make sure you're checking out his weekly film review column at PFW, and we will have Andrew back on the podcast here again soon. Andrew, have a great weekend, and once again, happy Thanksgiving to you.
Thanks, man. Same to you and yours.
Thank you.
And one more big thank you to Andrew for spending time with us on this Friday morning and breaking down the Thursday action like only he can. Always a pleasure to have Andrew on the Pro Football Weekly podcast. And similarly, it's always my great pleasure to welcome on Hub Arkish, our content director, our editor and publisher at Pro Football Weekly. And as I mentioned, also on assignment and watching firsthand from the sidelines the latest magic act by Matthew Stafford's Lions. Hub, how's it going?
Hello.
There's our guy, Hub Arkish. Hub, what's going on?
Not so much. How you doing, man?
I am doing well, thank you. How was your trip to Detroit, and what was that like watching another miracle in the Motor City from the sideline?
They've been doing you know, a fair amount of you know, making miracles so far this season. That was just a really solid football game. They were two very evenly matched football teams. I don't know if I'd call them two very good football teams, but certainly two very matched, evenly matched football teams. And, you know, Bradford made a mistake. That's the one thing he has not done all season long, through just his third interception of the season. And, unfortunately, it cost the football team a game. It's kind of the way that the year has gone for the Minnesota Vikings so far.
Yeah, you know, Bradford kind of tried the underneath stuff one too many times. Darius Slay playing some type of trap coverage picked him off, and that's what Darius Slay does. He comes up with big plays and big moments, and that's what's defined this Lions team, Hub. Obviously now 7-4, and all seven wins have been one score outcomes decided by either fourth quarter or overtime game-winning drives. So nothing short of remarkable. What was the vibe like on the sideline there as the Lions are gearing up for another comeback. I mean, I'd have to assume it's kind of all cool, all kind of calm within the storm. But is that accurate?
I think that's accurate. I can't say they were overly confident, to be honest with you. I you just had the feeling throughout the second half that the Vikings were the better football team, but you didn't know if that meant they were going to win because that offense is just so incompetent. And the one thing that kind of jumps out about both those teams, the Lions and the Vikings, the way they run the football, or more accurately, are unable to run the football,
right,
it's kind of hard to envision either one of them winning a playoff game, unless they get to play each other. So
right.
The Vikings' defense, I think, in the second half showed some flashes. Mike Zimmer told us at halftime, or walking off at halftime, that they had to get more pressure. You know, it's not hard when you look at the Minnesota Vikings season to figure out what's going on. Yesterday, going into that game, they had 23 quarterback sacks in their 6 wins, and they had 3 quarterback sacks in their 4 losses. And so in the first half, they didn't get tremendous pressure. Detroit had the better of the play. In the second half, they dialed up a few more blitzes. They got really nice pressure and looked like they were going to win the football game until Bradford made the big mistake.
Yeah, it was a hot start for Stafford, that long, impressive drive with a bunch of third down conversions, none more impressive than that one to Anquan Boldin in the red zone, kind of the maneuver in the pocket and then the sidearm before I think he found Boldin for a touchdown on the next play. But after you said, like you said, after that, the Lions offense didn't get a lot done until that last drive. So, Hub, you said it, maybe neither of these teams are all that good, but does it feel like now at 7-4, having opened up a little bit of a lead, do you feel like the Lions are kind of doing things too close for comfort? Do you think they're going to go on and win their first NFC North title? They still do have the Green Bay Packers coming to town to week 17. I can't help but wonder if all the teams we saw win yesterday are the ones that are going to end up winning their divisions. What do you think?
I don't think there's any question that Pittsburgh is going to win. Well, there's a question. It's a close race. But
right.
I think Pittsburgh's definitely going to win the AFC North. There is no question in my mind Dallas is going to win the NFC East.
Right.
The NFC North, it's tough. I would add one other thing about the Lions, and this is the advantage of being on the sidelines and doing these radio calls, is you get a look up close and personal. Matt Stafford isn't just playing like a different guy. He literally looks like a different guy. He's about 15 pounds leaner than he's played at any point in his career.
Mm-hmm.
To list him about 6'5", 240, to list him at 224 now. But I mean, he looks like an athlete. He used to have that kind of doughy look about him, and he's lost all of that. And you saw him scrambling out of the pocket. That's not Matt Stafford's game. He's doing everything you want a franchise quarterback to do right now.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing about the Detroit Lions that I'm not sure has gotten anywhere near enough pub is what Anquan Boldin means to that football team. He may be averaging 7.9 yards a catch, but he's got over 40 catches now. It projects to about a 70-catch season. Even if he's not piling up big yardage, he is huge in third down situations and red zone situations. And going into the season, you have a situation where Matt Stafford says, well, maybe we'll be okay or better. I don't think he said better. I think he said we'll be okay without Megatron because now we'll spread the ball around.
Mm-hmm.
So going into their 11th game of the season, they've got 4 receivers with 37 or more catches. And, Marvin Jones was hot early, has really tailed off. He didn't look great yesterday. Golden Tate has really come on. Eric Ebron is making plays for him. But Bolden, to me, is the key. So do the Lions win the North? I can't ignore the Packers. I think if the Packers lose this weekend, it's over. But until you get down to the last week or two, or unless you're in the playoffs and looking at matchups team against team, I always look at the most talented rosters, and there's still no question in my mind that the Packers are the most talented team in that division. The Vikings are a very close second, and the Lions are actually, to be honest with you, a distant third. I see how they're doing it, and I think Jim Bob Cooter and Pearl Austin are both going to be head coaching candidates at the end of the season, depending on how many jobs open up. But there still are so many ways to attack the Lions. I think one of the things that was lost on folks, I didn't hear the TV broadcast. I don't know if they picked up on it or not. With my critical analysis of Phil Simms, I'm guessing they missed it. But, late in the first half, Graham Glasgow, the rookie who had taken the job away at left guard from Laken Tomlinson, who was last year's number one pick, was pulled out of the game. And, right. and Tomlinson played about a quarter and a half, and then he whiffed on a couple blocks, including that second sack of Stafford. And then next thing you knew, here comes Glasgow again. So there's weaknesses all over that football team. And, you know, very disappointed that DeAndre Levy didn't get on the field yesterday. I suspect he will. I mean, they've got to feel great about the fact that they're 7-4 without him. But I was stunned going into that game. The starting linebackers who dressed for the Lions yesterday, between them, had less than 25 tackles. You know, it's all in the secondary, and with Tahir Whitehead, and they get decent play up front. This kid Hyder, who didn't do much yesterday, has had a big season for him. But I look at that Lions team, and even after yesterday being on the field with them for 3 hours, I can't figure out how they're 7-4. So I still can't quite hand them the division yet, even though they're in great shape with the Vikings now. In essence, they have a game and a half lead because, of course, they've swept the Vikings now, so they're going to get any tiebreakers there.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I guess that's kind of it's been the story. You know, they're pulling these wins out of you-know-where, and it's been fun to watch, but it is hard to know if it will be sustainable. Hub, what do you think? Just spending a couple more minutes here with Hub Arkish, who was on the sidelines for the Lions and Vikings yesterday. I would imagine that the Viking, I think in a percentage standpoint, they're now about a coin flip to make the playoffs, but boy, it feels like that ship has probably sailed. Do you think there's any scenario where they can get things corrected? They lose two more offensive linemen yesterday, and just things not going Minnesota's way, obviously.
I just don't know if there's enough warm bodies, Arthur. You know, yep. We heard the rumor that they're hopeful that maybe AP gets back for the last two games, Christmas Eve. Obviously, that would be huge if he's ready to play, but a guy at 31 coming off his second serious knee surgery in what, 4 years or 3 years now, this just seems like too much to ask. I don't think Sam Bradford gets enough credit because he's really played well. He actually outplayed Stafford yesterday until that interception, unfortunately. And, of course, that one's in the record books too, so that's why Stafford gets the win. But, you know, there's ways you can make the argument. I don't understand why that defense isn't playing better than it is. I mean, even watching them yesterday, you know, there was that stretch from halftime until about the middle of the fourth quarter where they looked like the Viking defense we saw earlier in the season, but they can't seem to sustain it for more than, you know, 20, 25, 15 minutes or whatever it may be. The good news for them, and I think we should have seen this coming, is the wild card race, I think, changed somewhat dramatically yesterday. You expected Washington to get beat. Giants are going to get beat a couple times. You know, you've got all these other teams, Arizona hanging around at 4-5-1. The Vikings still sitting there with five losses. Eagles with five losses. The Vikings' problem could very well come down to tiebreakers, you know, because that loss to the Eagles is going to hurt. Getting swept by the Lions is going to hurt. But honestly, you know, they're very much in the wild card race right now. I don't know that you get a seven-loss team because of all the four, you know, the Giants with three and then all the 4-5-loss teams. But 10-6 is probably still going to do it. And you know, if that defense were to find itself, if they were to get a real AP back for a couple games at the end, you know, is winning four out of their last five, you know, unthinkable? No, you know, I don't think it is. So I wouldn't rule them out yet. But obviously, they took a real blow yesterday.
Yeah, no question about it, and it'll be interesting to see. You know, Adrian Peterson, 31. No one knows what his future looks like with the Vikings. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see kind of which way this franchise goes, assuming they do miss the playoffs this year. They still have the loaded defense, but, you know, are they building around Sam Bradford? Are they assuming Bridgewater comes back? There are actually a lot of questions, so will be interesting to see. Hub, just before I let you go, is there a team coming off the bye, do you think? We've got Atlanta coming off the bye, Denver, San Diego. Any of these teams that's going to make conversation interesting regarding playoffs or otherwise? Atlanta hosts Arizona. Obviously, Denver's got the game of the week hosting Kansas City. The Texans, coming off that tough loss in Mexico City, will host San Diego. Any of these, are there any stories we're maybe not talking about heading into the weekend that maybe suddenly we're talking about again that potentially revolve around any of these games or any others?
Well, there's the two good teams that I think are walking into traps this week. I just, you know, you got Atlanta at home versus Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And I know they're coming off the bye, and I know they, you know, it looked pretty good at 6-4. Arizona, as disappointing as they've been, is still in the top two or three in almost every major defensive category. They're playing really good defense. David Johnson has to be the best-kept secret in football, and I know he's not a secret, but nobody's talking about him. I mean, this kid, the only guy who's had more consecutive 100-plus total yardage games in history is Edgerrin James, you know, who did it twice. He started the season with 13-game runs in 2000 and 2005. David Johnson has been over 100 yards from scrimmage in every game they've had this year. He's an incredible weapon. Rory Fitzgerald's having a good year. So with the great defense and with those kind of weapons on offense, what's the story? Well, Carson Palmer has sucked. And if Carson Palmer can just, you know, become a better game manager, I see Arizona going into Atlanta. If there was a team, I mean, I can't wait to see, you know, Patrick Peterson and Julio Jones go at it. So that one's a fascinating game. And then the other one, the Raiders – and we've been on the Raiders at Pro Football Weekly from the beginning. We picked them as a wild card team. There's nothing stunning going on here. But they are still, in my mind, the third best team in that division. And I think Kansas City showed that when they went into Oakland earlier and beat them 26-10. Mm-hmm. I think the Chiefs just got caught in a trap last week looking through Tampa to the Denver game. Denver actually is probably not much better than Oakland, but they're as good. And you got Carolina going in there this weekend. I know they lost Luke Kuechly, but look closer at Carolina. Thomas Davis still plays at an incredibly high level. Shaq Thompson has proven to be a great pick for them. So now A.J. Klein is going to come off the bench. Well, Thompson took that position away from A.J. Klein to take, and now, you know, Klein will come to take the Luke Kuechly spot. Nobody can lose a Luke Kuechly and not lose something. Right. But Klein was playing good football before they got Thompson. He's a former Big 12 player. So the point is, I don't think the defense comes apart without Kuechly. And I look at the offense maybe getting a little bit better. I think they know what they've got to do. They got to turn Cam Newton loose. They got to take a chance on him taking some shots. Yep. But they very quietly have won three of their last four again. And they're sitting there at 4-6. If Atlanta gets beat by Arizona and Carolina can go get a win at Oakland, suddenly, you know, Carolina's a game out. And I believe they got one left with Arizona. So those are the two, you know, games I'd keep a close eye on this weekend that I think could have very interesting results with huge playoff implications.
Yeah, interesting. In that Oakland-Carolina game, certainly the Panthers need to find a way to protect Cam Newton with Oakland's pass rush heating up a little bit, of course. And then it seemed like the Raiders slept walk through most of that Mexico City game, but their ability to get those backs isolated on linebackers. So I guess without Luke Kuechly, you will kind of wonder if Thomas Davis and A.J. Klein, Shaq Thompson, whoever it is exposed a little bit too, potentially, if that's Oakland's game plan again. But Hub, I'll let you go. We appreciate your time, as always, on the way out. What'd you think of Aretha Franklin, the longest national anthem, I think, on record? Did you love it? You were just saw that one up close and personal as well, obviously.
Well, more than up close and personal. I'm standing on the sidelines, and when I do the broadcast for Westwood One, we got the national radio call, I have two hits that I do from the field before the game starts, and my producer is in my ear talking to me about my hit that starts immediately following the national anthem, and I turn around and I bump into this woman getting out of a golf cart. She bumped into me, actually. And I looked at her and I go, my God, that's Aretha Franklin. I couldn't believe it. I was standing next to Aretha Franklin, and I'm like, wow, I didn't know she was doing the anthem. And I will tell you, to some people, I'm sure it was painfully long, maybe the CBS executives, because kickoff was 3 minutes late. But every note was perfect. I had no idea. I'd never seen Aretha Franklin play the piano.
Right.
And I, as far as I'm concerned, she could have done a 10-minute version because it was absolutely spectacular. And I'm sorry if the people on TV and the writers with the over-under pool on the anthem and the press box didn't like it. The crowd loved it. She was spectacular. And the thing that really caught me off guard, bumping into her, I don't know how old she is, but she looks great. I thought that she was older than she looks, so I'll tell you that. So, yeah, it was actually one of the highlights of the season for me, bumping into Aretha on the sidelines.
Very cool. Yeah, she is obviously the queen of soul and a national treasure. I thought that was neat, too. Getting a chance to watch that with Spencer on the new TV was a great way to start Thanksgiving. So, Hub, obviously we miss getting to spend Thanksgiving with you, but we appreciate you coming on the podcast, and we'll look forward to catching up a little bit of family time over the coming days and weeks, and we'll get back to the regular Pro Football Weekly podcast, or stay with it on our regular routine next week, okay?
All right, talk to you later.
All right, that is Hub Arkish, our publisher and editor at Pro Football Weekly, and of course my co-host on the Pro Football Weekly podcast.
And one more time, we want to thank both Hub Arkish and Andrew Garda for taking time on their Friday morning and breaking out of their turkey coma to talk a little bit of football. Always fun. More than anything, we want to thank you for being back for another week of the Pro Football Weekly podcast. It's a treat and a great honor to be able to host this. I am your host, Arthur Arkish, on behalf of Pro Football Weekly. One more very happy Thanksgiving wish for you, and sending you off into the weekend on a high note. I hope that you enjoy the Week 12 slate. We'll be back here, as always, breaking it down next week on the Pro Football Weekly podcast. Thanks again, and have a great weekend.